These are the recollections of Turner Ashby. Memories of the years when the oceans rose and the several states were separated asunder. Chapter 7. Turner, we can't make love up here on top of this mountain forever, the ladies told me. I don't see why not, I said. The snows in the Arctic cold of the winter of 2032 had come down consistently and relentlessly for the entire month of January. There was nothing to do but huddle near the stove, eat beans, read. Huddle some more. I was in seventh heaven. The news of the war between the Commonwealth of Virginia and the aggressor, North Carolina, was sketchy and often contradictory. Richmond was taken. Richmond was saved. The drone Navy had entered the Chesapeake Bay and was at the mouth of James River. Drone Navy was lost at sea. Our families were safe. Our families had fled. I do realize I have explained this before, but there was no way to know, no way to confirm any information up on top of that mountain, or anywhere else for that matter. The digital storage viruses, known as Cloudburst, made whatever information there was just as useless and just as variable as any time in history, I suppose. Except I'll contend that the Cloudburst made it worse than before, and I'll tell you why. It was so much more complicated. Put a piece of paper in a desk drawer, it'll probably stay there. It might get wet, it might burn, but you can hold it and study the ashes if you have to. But this was not so with the digital realm. Anything with ones and zeros was on constant shuffle. The subtle, not-so-subtle details of dates and birth dates, route and numbers. Any information entered on a computer simply spun and bounced like a ball on a roulette wheel. I'll use that analogy of gambling, because that's what getting information was like then. Crapshoot. The changes were random as a programmed computer virus was able to make it. That's what made our error so hard to pin down. The memory of the state, the memory of industry, the shared memory of the people was all of dubious value. You just had to have been there. You want to play another game of Monopoly? I asked the ladies. Thank God the sun's out, the ladies said. For maybe the first time in 6 weeks, we ventured out of that cabin into the deep drifts of snow under the bright, cloudless blue sky. We walked and slipped the 2 miles to Jones Rock. Joan, sadly, had been a little girl who had wandered out and gotten lost in the woods in the year 1789, long ways back. She made it all the way up to that ridge above her village. She was found months later, curled up in a little ball. May she rest in peace. Jones Rock, overlooked, still does, I imagine, overlooked the midsection of the Shenandoah Valley. And Lays and I looked down over that valley. It looked like an ocean or an inland sea, a sea of clouds. It was the most beautiful of sights. Made one feel privileged and very alone. Very, very alone. We should be hunting, Lays said. I'm sick of beans. You think there are any deer this far up the mountain? I asked, thinking about the 3,000-foot elevation and the snow. Course not, Turner. Deer are too big to shoot anyhow. What would we do with all that meat? We wouldn't be able to preserve it, said Lays. We should probably be trapping for rabbits, squirrel. Now, it should not have surprised me, I know. But Lays of a sudden had become quite practical in the arts of survival, become very resourceful in every imaginable matter. She was planning meals and counting our stores. She made sure we kept the date and checked it off on the calendar. She reminded me to keep the wood box full. And she kept a constant vigil sitting at the window, looking for who or what, I don't know. This was not like our Lays, our dreaming Lays. If you would have asked me the summer before what she might have expected to find if she found herself wandering in the woods, I would have said most likely a unicorn. Or that's what she at least would have been looking for. This was no longer the case. I do not know what her hubbub was about. We were surviving just fine. Sam Bellows had laid in plenty to eat. He was a man of pessimistic values, but unfortunately of limited culinary originality or expression. He must have had a year's supply of food up in that cabin. It's all the same as all beans. There were a number of varieties of beans, some soup beans, and there was the ordinary Sunday bean-like substances. Apparently 17-year-old girls like Lay's believe there was more to life. I can't imagine what. If North Carolina wins the war, do you think they'll send us to Texas? I asked. How am I supposed to know, Turner? I got a chip in my head, and I can tell you who's been on the tax rolls of Culpeper County for the past 100 years. But I can't tell you the future. Well, I hope we don't go to Texas, I said. I burn easy. Texas, Texas, Texas. That's the name of the state that's been on the lips of every man, woman, and child for over 10 years. It would be for the next 50. Really for most of the century. It all had happened so fast. All of a sudden, Texas was center of the universe. A little frightening how fast it happened. Here's how it happened. Here's why every state, no matter how independent they claimed to be, ended up sending their tax-indentured citizens off to Texas. Because if you thought about Texas, as it was 175 years ago, or how it is now, this would make no sense. Texas was the land of sagebrush, and dwindling oil reserves, cowpokes chasing lost calves, a desert close to it. But as the oceans rose, back in the teens, in the 2020s, a vast, widely rich combination occurred. Hydro engineers out of the dying embers of the Gulf petroleum industry stumbled on a cheap way to desalinate water off the Gulf. It was amazingly cheap and fast. They turned the ocean brine into the elixir of fresh, cool water, hundreds of millions of gallons of it, and they immediately put that water to use. They steered the water inland. They built canals that crisscrossed the barren belly of Texas and created a newer, cheaper, more profitable breadbasket the world had ever known. And suddenly, Texas was a veritable Garden of Eden. Replaced Southern California, Florida, Kansas. Grew the food faster and cheaper. Maybe it tasted good, I don't know, I can't remember. But did I mention more, better, faster, cheaper? Oh, those were lovely, lovely words to the post-industrialists and the venture capitalists. Always been a mantra in any age. More, better, faster, cheaper. Like the pharaohs of old. Own the food. Grow rich. Of course, to make newer, cheaper, faster, more, better. I laugh at that, but it's true. To make better, more, better. Labor was required, and a lot of labor. A tremendous amount of labor. Cheaper the labor, the better, of course. And preferably, the source of labor would have no choice in what they were exactly going to be doing, how much they might be compensated, where they might reside. In the early days, the floundering United States government provided labor to Texas in exchange for some relief of the national debt. And then as the separate states separated, they had no choice, no choice at all, but to send their own indentured citizens to Texas. We all gotta eat. Now I repeat this long-winded discussion of the Lone Star State for one reason only. Texas scared the hell out of us. Every boy and girl, anyone of my age, my tender age group, that time looked over their shoulder and wondered when it would all happen. When would a black hood be pulled over our heads? We'd be whisked off to pick cotton or corn or rice in the newly freshened Rio Grande Delta. Heads up, Turner. I half turned. I got hit upside the head with a snowball. Lays, I said, you don't know what you unleashed. You do not know. I giggle, I chase Lays down the trail close to the cabin. You're going to be in a world of hurt if I catch you. In hell if I didn't get hit by another snowball. Lays laughed and ran and turned, and we chased each other all afternoon. So this is the way we dealt with the thought of going down that mountain in the spring. I returned unto Richmond to see if anything would be left, and wondering whether the loose borders of our states had remained fixed, and wondering whether we would remain free. We acted like kids. We were kids. Silly kids. We slid and wrestled and put snow down each other's backs. I caught Lays and I kissed her. Are those tracks? Lays suddenly stopped. There were boot prints in the snow. Fairly large prints. They weren't our prints. We knew that, and stupidly we followed them. They'd come towards his cabin, stopped and turned back. The prints wove around boulders and cut a couple hundred yards down into the gray timber. They led toward what we knew was a fairly steep outcropping of rocks. They went right over the edge. We heard the crackle of a radio, walkie-talkie, I believe. We turned and we ran. Lays and I stayed up all night in our cabin. We were not nearly as alone as we once thought. Until next time, Turner Ashby.